lift your head, weary sinner. Well, it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. So glad that you are listening today. You're listening. There's a few different ways you can listen. You can listen, of course, at Joy 620 on your radio dial. You can listen online at WRJZ.com. Or maybe you only get part of the show and you want to hear all of it. We will have it up on podcast before the week's out as well. So you can listen to it on iTunes or any other podcast app as well. So there's plenty of ways that you can listen to the show as we talk about life and as we talk about Hope Resource Center. So a lot has happened since I was on last. There's been a week. A week has gone by, and last week, I had an opportunity to talk about my granddad who passed away, and we had his funeral this past Saturday, and it just was a beautiful time for us to come together as a family. And yes, we mourned, but we also celebrated an amazing man and an amazing 95 years. And so we did that over the weekend and just really enjoyed that. So I appreciate your prayers. I appreciate all those that were thinking about my family and as we celebrated my pawpaw. And so enjoyed spending time with some family over the weekend. Also over the weekend, what happened was we saw the inauguration of a new president, and we had an opportunity to see one of the prettiest and most amazing things that we can ever see, and that's a peaceful transition of power in this country. And so our founders back years and years ago came together and said, this is what it's going to look like for this country. And so that's what we have, is we have one president leave and another president walk in, and you see their families interact with each other. And yes, campaigns get nasty and primaries get nasty and all of that. But ultimately what you saw on Friday, minus a few protesters that were out, you saw an amazing picture of what freedom and liberty looks like. And so regardless of where you are on the fence, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, or you don't care, that is an amazing picture that we get to witness every 4 years in this country. And we got to witness that on Friday. And I will say that what we have seen since Friday is an administration that's going to be busy. Now, this isn't going to turn into a political show, but I do think it's important that we look at a couple things that decisions that have already been made by this administration and decisions that are being made by Congress. And what we're seeing is pro-life legislation, pro-life issues are being brought to the forefront, and they're doing that all the while we prepare for the March for Life that happens this Friday in Washington, D.C. So just today, just now, right before I came on the air, Speaker Paul Ryan released a press release that says, today the House passed H.R. 7, which makes the Hyde Amendment permanent, blocking taxpayer money from funding abortions. So the Hyde Amendment, what that does is it blocks funding for any kind of abortion. So taxpayer dollars do not go to abortions. And here is the speaker's statement. We are a pro-life Congress. That is music to my ears. Today we renewed our commitment to the Hyde Amendment with the passage of the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. I want to thank Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey for his tireless commitment to this cause. This legislation protects the conscience of American taxpayers by ensuring that not a single dollar of their hard-earned money goes to fund abortions. As hundreds of thousands of Americans flock to Washington for the March for Life, we must never forget that defending all of our people, especially the defenseless, must be our top priority if we want to be a good and moral nation. Now, I understand that some folks are going to hear that and some folks are going to read that and they are going to have issue with that, because not only do they want abortions, and they claim that they want to see safe, legal, and rare abortions, but then they want us to fund them. And so it isn't just safe, legal, and rare. It is we want these, and then we want taxpayers, regardless of how the taxpayer feels on the issue, we want them to fund abortions. And that's not okay. And so what we see with this resolution that was passed today is the Congress is working to make sure that our tax dollars do not go to funding abortions. And so what you saw over the weekend also was a women's march, and a lot of people that were upset about the new administration. And you know, we live in an amazing country that has freedoms that do not occur in other places. And so because of that, you can have millions of people march in opposition to the current administration, and they're not thrown in prison as long as they're not violent and commit assault, but they're not murder, they're not anything. They are, it is said, it's okay, you know, because we live in the freest country on the planet. And so that's what happened on Saturday. But what was interesting about that march on Saturday is pro-life women were not welcome at that march. And the platform of that march that occurred on Saturday was about pushing a narrative of what they call, quote-unquote, reproductive rights, which is just a mask or a veil for abortion. And so what you saw was a pro-choice, pro-abortion demonstration across the country. Now I would say that there were some people marching that probably are pro-life, but the vast majority of those that marched and the certainly the organizers of the march were pro-choice. They were not pro-life. And so many things are going on. You know, it's interesting that just in a span of a week, millions and millions and millions of people are going to be in Washington, D.C. From Friday at the inauguration, you know, I had a few hundred thousand people there. From Saturday to the protest, the Women's March, there was, you know, hundreds of thousands of people there. This Friday at the March for Life, hundreds of thousands of people are going to be there. And so isn't this country great? And I bring that up because I think at times we neglect that. And even though we may disagree with certain marches and we may disagree with certain people, we are at a point where we have the freedom and the ability to do these things. And so that's why tomorrow morning I'm going to get up early and I'm going to start my drive to Washington, D.C. to join the hundreds of thousands that will be marching for life. And we do that because we want to be engaged in the process, not simply because of what we do at Hope Resource Center, by providing the services that we provide. But we want to go further than that. You know, because I get on here and I speak at churches, and any opportunity I get to speak, I say it's not just a bumper sticker, a vote, or a license plate. It's more than that. But it's also those things, which is why I'm going to Washington, D.C. And what we're seeing, you know, people are saying all the time, and we had the president of the March for Life on a couple weeks ago. And what people will say is, well, why, this is the 44th march, why do you continue to march? What difference have you made over these years? Well, we see with the resolution that was passed today, and with what we think is coming down the pike for Supreme Court nominee, and with what we think is coming down the pike for defunding the largest abortion provider in the country, we see momentum. And that momentum occurs not just because of legislation, but it occurs because the hearts and the minds of the people are changing. And I'm going to get into this in a little bit, but we're going to look at a new poll that was recently released that is showing that more and more people across this country, which is what we've been saying, more and more people are saying, yes, we need to restrict abortion. Yes, we are pro-life. No, we are not pro-choice. And so we are seeing a shift. The problem is, what we tend to do is we focus on the narrative that we see on social media or on cable news, and that's only targeting a very minor group of folks that believe a certain way. Now, they believe that they are representing a large portion of the population, but in reality, they are not representing a large portion of the population, because the truth is, a large portion of the population believe in life. They believe in family. They believe in helping their neighbor. They believe in serving. I heard yesterday there was some tornadoes in the South, maybe in Georgia, and they were talking about the outpouring of support from the communities in and around those areas, which is exactly what we saw here in East Tennessee with the fires in the Smokies. Because that's who we are. We go out of our way to help our neighbor. That's what I said about my granddad last week. We were raised to help your neighbors. Your neighbors needed you and you needed them. And so that represents America. Even these large marches. You know, that they're saying that the march on Saturday was the largest protest this world has ever seen. Even if the high estimates are correct, at 2-point-something million people marching on Saturday, that doesn't even represent all of women in this country. And so there's a large segment of the population that gets left out. There's a large segment of the population that doesn't get a chance to get in front of the camera, that doesn't get a chance to voice their opinion. And folks, that large segment, a lot of them are pro-life. They stand with us. And so that's why you have pregnancy centers opening up in basements of churches and pregnancy centers opening up in rural communities and pregnancy centers opening up in inner city communities and pregnancy centers opening up all across the board. Because people are saying, if I believe the Bible to be true, that everybody was created in the image of God, then I need to do something about that. I need to love them. I need to be there for them. I don't simply need to stand there and yell, "Have your baby, how could you do this?" I need to say, "Have your baby, I'm going to be here to help." Adoption is an option, and guess what? We have people that want to adopt your child. That's who we are as a people. And so as we prepare to make our trip to Washington, D.C. this week, it isn't lost on us the freedoms and the liberties that we have because we are blessed to live in this country. But what's also not lost on us is as we go to D.C. and we celebrate a pro-life generation, what isn't lost on us is a generation has been aborted. And so we must never neglect that truth as we celebrate life. And so marching alone, will it make a huge difference? Will it see policies made to change the minds of the people? No, marching alone will not do that. But consistent care for the individual and consistent work and engagement in the community will absolutely see the difference. And so what you have with March for Life is 44 marches. The 44th march that has happened since Roe v. Wade. And so it's been consistent. It has grown over the years. And we have gained a lot of ground. And there's still much ground to be gained. And when we come back, we're going to look at some numbers about the populace and the population saying, "Hey, we are pro-life. We do stand with you." We'll talk about that when we come back. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Again, thank you for listening. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com, and you can donate at investinghope.com as well. Today what we're doing is we're talking about the freedom and liberties that we have in this country and how a generation is starting to see a shift, and more pro-life people are coming up front and talking. And right now we have someone online. Darlene, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
I do.
Okay.
Well, when is that pro-life march you were talking about in Washington?
It is on Friday.
This coming Friday?
This coming Friday, yes.
And are there buses? I mean, can you...
There may be.
Buses?
We're not taking a bus. We're going up a little bit early. We're leaving tomorrow. You could reach out to the National Right to Life or the Tennessee Right to Life. They may have... They may have some information on any possible buses that'll be going up from this area to Washington, D.C., and you can find them online. And they have headquarters there in Nashville as well.
Okay, then it's Tennessee Right for Life?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
All right, thank you, and you're welcome to call as well. Our goal here is to see that life would be celebrated. And so we are going to, last year I went to the march and it was like the blizzard of the century in Washington, D.C., and there was 20 inches of snow on the ground, and it all started right before we marched, and by the end of the march there was snow everywhere, and the next day you couldn't even drive a car or anything, and we got snowed in, and I stayed up there for two extra days until finally I said I had enough, and I just went and got my vehicle and drove home. This year it's going to be in the 40s. It's going to be a little cold, but the weather is supposed to be nice, and so hopefully we see the large amount of numbers that we think we will see marching with us. And so one thing before I get into the numbers of the new polls that are out there, I wanted to read you something that was posted today in the Atlantic. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because this is where we are as a society. And if you've listened to this show long enough, and if you've ever met me or anything like that, you know my interest in the political world. I was a political science major. I like to say I'm a political scientist. That's not true, but I did major in political science. And so I worked in politics, have a passion for politics, have a passion for the governmental process and how this country was founded and all of those things. And it's interesting to me, what we see at a political level is we tend to not see intellectual consistency. And what I mean by that is you have people on the right that will justify things that their party people will do, but then they attack people on the left that will do the exact same thing, and then vice versa. And so I think it's important that regardless of if you fall on the right or the left, it's important that we be intellectually consistent. And so there's an article today in the Atlantic that, in my opinion, is not intellectually consistent, which is interesting because it's written by someone that is working on their PhD and goes to Yale. But it's talking about ultrasounds, and it's saying how ultrasound has become political. And it says this. I'm not going to read it all because it's a lot of it's not that great, but I'll go through some of it. And it says, one of the first measures that Republicans in the 115th Congress proposed was the Heartbeat Protection Act. On January 11th, a group led by Steve King of Iowa introduced a bill that required doctors nationwide to check for fetal heartbeats before performing an abortion. And so the focus of this article is ultrasound is only used to coerce women to have their babies. It even at one point says that heartbeats, what's it matter if there's a heartbeat present or not? And it says doctors do not even call this rapidly dividing cell mass a fetus until 9 weeks into pregnancy. Yet the current debate shows how effectively politicians have used visual technology to redefine what counts as life. And so it's interesting to me, they are attacking ultrasound. But when you look at those that argue from the progressive leaning of things, they typically will argue stances where they celebrate the idea of science advancement, right? So they celebrate the idea of science advancement when it comes to climate change. They celebrate the idea of science advancement when it comes to ice caps melting and things like that. Now, when you argue with them and when you try to make points about, well, maybe that isn't true, maybe that's a theory, maybe it was a survey done on, you know, just 70 scientists and not all the scientists around the country, when you try to do those things, they call us science deniers. Okay, so you have an article now that is not celebrating the advancement of medical technology, which is ultrasound. So back in the day, they didn't have a clue if they were having a boy or girl. I saw someone posted today that, you know, back in the day, we didn't know if it was going to be a horse, a cow, or a dog until it was born. And then, bam, it's a baby. That's amazing. But the truth is, we all know it's a baby. That is why when someone finds out they're pregnant, what happens? They tell everybody. And then what happens? People plan them a baby shower, not a fetus shower, not a blob of cell shower, but a baby shower. And then what happens? Oh, is it going to be a boy or is it going to be a girl? Are you going to have a gender reveal party? What are you going to name her? What are you going to name him? So I can monogram the diaper bag. We do that. Even pro-choicers do that because we know that it's a baby inside the womb. And all ultrasounds allows us to do, first off, it allows us to see what's going on inside the womb. It allows us to know, you know, Is there something the doctors need to be prepared for down the road? Is there something the parents need to be prepared for down the road? Is this a viable pregnancy? Is there a heartbeat? Is the baby where it needs to be inside the womb? Those are all very good, positive things of ultrasound. We've seen a number of patients come into Hope Resource Center, and we do an ultrasound, and we notice that it's an ectopic. And so then we send them, we're able to refer them to the emergency room, to a doctor immediately. And we've been told by doctors, because you did that, that woman's life was saved. Because ultrasound showed us there was a problem. So arguing that ultrasound is simply political, again, I'm not sitting here arguing that you know, you'll have people on the pro-choice side that say ultrasounds do not change anything. It will not change the mind of a mom who is facing an unplanned pregnancy. And then you have people on the pro-life side that ultrasounds absolutely change minds of moms that are on the fence. I can't speak for those movements. What I can speak for is what we see at Hope Resource Center. And what I can say is 85% of those that see an ultrasound at our center choose life. And so does ultrasound have an impact both medically and for the life of a child? Absolutely. I've told this story before. We actually had a patient come in and say, when I see this ultrasound, if what I see on the screen is a blob of cells, I'm going to walk out of here and go get an abortion. But if I see a baby, I'm going to choose life. Well, guess what she saw? She saw a baby, and what she's seeing is exactly what's inside of her womb. It's not something that we made up. It's not a time lapse on the screen that we just created. It is actually what's going on inside of her body. And so for this author to attack ultrasounds as a political scheme for those that are on the pro-life side of things to coerce women, which I find interesting, we're not the ones coercing women to do anything. But we know that many are coerced to have abortions. So their argument here is, that ultrasound ultimately humanizes the fetus. And heaven forbid that happen. It'd be crazy for a mom to know what exactly is inside of her. It'd be crazy for a family to know what's a human. And so if you took these, again, if you took these at the surface and you just read these type of articles, then one would think and one would start to believe, wow, maybe the pro-life movement is minuscule. Maybe it's not making the difference that we think it is. But you can't take these. These don't represent, again, these don't represent the entire generation. These don't represent the masses. And so if you get a chance, go to theatlantic.com. You can read the article. But it's a very long article that rambles quite a bit. But ultimately what it is saying is, it's a fetus. Let's not worry about it. Women should be able to get abortions at any point, and they shouldn't have to have ultrasounds. So it's not a coherent or logical argument, but that's what we've been faced with. That's what we've been faced with. So again, science advancement at times is good for their argument, and science advancement at times hurts their argument, and so they run away from it. And all we try to do at Hope Resource Center is provide all the options for the patient. You know, the other pro-choicers are always talking about options. Well, ultrasound allows them to truly weigh out the options in front of them. The reason that abortion clinics don't like it is because they know that when that mom sees that baby, minds and hearts tend to change. That's not coercion. That is truth-telling. There's a baby inside. Now what are we going to do about it? We'll talk more when we come back.
I got to get myself together. I got some place to go. And I'm
And we're back at Azure Wood with Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for listening. If you're about to get out of your car and you want to continue to listen, you can at WRJZ.com or wait for the podcast to be up in a day or so. We'll get that up on our website, investinghope.com, and also on iTunes as well. So the poll that I've been discussing over the last couple breaks and segments, we've been talking about it, and now I'm going to actually read it. And so I know that you've been waiting on that. So a new national survey, which regularly partners, and the surveyor regularly partners with NBC News and the Wall Street Journal, they find that heavy majorities of Americans believe abortion is morally wrong and favor an array of mainstream restrictions on the practice. Abortion supporters habitually seek to cast pro-life sentiment as quote-unquote extreme and limited to a loud anti-woman minority of voters. But the data betrays that framing as cynical and wishful partisan spin. And again, this article is at townhall.com. In reality, many pro-life positions aren't merely mainstream, but actually wildly supported, including among majorities of American women. Based on Town Hall's look at the poll's crosstabs, here are a few of the survey's findings. A commanding 83% of American adults oppose U.S. tax dollars being spent to facilitate abortions overseas, representing a strong endorsement of President Trump's recent reinstitution of the so-called Mexico City policy. And so what that policy was, again, he signed an executive order a couple days ago saying that we will no longer help fund abortions around the world, which some of you may be hearing that and saying, hold on, we funded abortions around the world? Well, yes, our taxpayers, through the Mexico City policy, helped fund abortions around the world. And so President Trump has come in and with an executive order, he's reinstituted the Mexico City policy that says we will not send money to help with abortions around the world. So a supermajority, 61%, oppose tax dollars financing abortions in the U.S., with just 35% in support. This includes 61% of women. And so, again, that goes with the Hyde Amendment that we talked about earlier, and the Hyde Amendment saying no taxpayer dollars will go to abortions in the U.S. and the resolution that was passed today. So 61% of the people agree with that and say, no, my tax dollars should not pay for abortions. A slim majority of Americans identify as, quote-unquote, pro-choice on the abortion question. But a 52% majority is at least in favor of limiting legal abortion to very rare cases, such as rape, incest, and to save the life of the mother, which covers the pro-life spectrum. That's their words, not mine. And so what that means is those that, when you say you're pro-life, and those that will then say, well, I'm pro-life except for, and usually that except for includes rape, incest, life of the mother. And so even pro-lifers like me that are pro-life in every scenario and in every case, if someone agreed to a piece of legislation that would go that far, even with those exceptions, that would be a giant step in the right directions, right direction. An additional 22% say abortion should be illegal after the first trimester of pregnancy, leaving only about 1/4 of respondents to embrace the radically permissive stance on the issue. Among those backing significant restrictions on abortion are nearly 80% of African Americans and Latinos. On the moral question, roughly 6 in 10 Americans say abortion is morally wrong. 6 in 10, that's big, compared to less than 40% who say it's morally acceptable. A majority believes the practice ultimately does more harm than good for women, while the less than 1/3 say it improves a woman's life. A lopsided 78% of American adults conclude that laws can protect both pregnant mothers and their unborn children, a recognition of the humanity of both parties. By a 24-point margin, respondents supporting barring abortions after 20 weeks in the 6th month and beyond, and a similar majority says that medical professionals who oppose abortion should not be forced to provide those services. And the polls internals show that women are just as likely to hold these views as men. And then the article continues to talk about it. And the poll was commissioned by the Knights of Columbus, drew results from a large pool of more than 2,700 American adults, and it has a margin of error less than 2 percentage points. And so it's a well-respected surveyor, well-respected pollster. And what's important about these numbers is, again, a lot of times what we see is we've allowed for societal and cultural elites to move the narrative. And so they have owned the narrative. A narrative that they claim everyone supports Planned Parenthood. The narrative that they claim everyone supports $500 million every year from our tax dollars going to the largest abortion provider in the country. A narrative that they push that says everyone believes abortion is okay at any point in time for any reason. And so that is the narrative that we hear. And if you let that cloud your judgment, then you'll start to believe, wow, I'm really out here on an island with my pro-life way of thinking. Well, folks, let me tell you, you're not on an island. The vast majority of the people, if they're honest, believe that some restrictions, at the very least, some restrictions make sense. Why? Well, because there's a life involved. We're not pro-life and don't think about the safety of the mom. That's crazy talk. We're pro-baby, we're pro-woman, we're pro-man, we're pro-family. You can't be pro-life without one of those other things. And so it isn't that we don't care about people. Actually, it's the opposite that is true. We do the work that we do, and we march, and we stand, and we engage, and we vote, and we do all of these things for life because we feel like it's our God-given duty to do that, to go out and say, hey, everybody is created in the image of God, and they matter to me. So that baby matters to me. That mom matters to me. That dad matters to me. That family matters to me. And so what we have seen as a society and culture is, and from the abortion industry, their mindset and the reason they push the narrative that they push is because they're making billions of dollars off of abortion. It isn't because they're helping women. It isn't about women's rights. It's about the budget line. And you may be sitting there going, well, Andrew, you don't know that. How can you say that? You don't know if that's true. Well, then answer me this. I just have a simple question to the abortion industry. Do you charge for your services? And when I say charge, do you charge that patient individually? Do you charge that patient's insurance? Do you charge the state? Maybe the patient's own a state-funded insurance plan? Do you charge? Now, they would then look at me and say, well, yes, but we have a sliding scale. So if we have a low-income person come in, she's going to pay less. And if we have someone that has a little bit more wealth, they're going to pay more. So it's a sliding scale. Whatever they can afford is what we're going to take. You know what we charge at Hope? Nothing. Nothing. We're performing a lot of the same services that they're performing, minus the abortion. But we're not charging a dime. Why? Because our mission is one of, we've been put here for a purpose, and we're going to love and serve this community and those in need. And because we care deeply, not just about baby, but we care deeply about that mom. We care deeply about what she's going through. And we want to have a conversation with her. We want her to know that she's beautiful, that she deserves our respect, and that she's loved. So the last thing we want to do is create a barrier to her getting the service that she needs. Now, the abortion lobby would say, well, that barrier is when you get rid of government funding of abortion. So the Hyde Amendment, the one that I talked about earlier, they would say that's a barrier to young women and old women and middle-aged women that are seeking abortions. And then I would look at them and say, no, ma'am, no, sir, that is not the barrier. The barrier is your cost sheet. That is the barrier. You are charging them money. If you truly wanted to provide the service to them, then get rid of your cost sheet and just provide the service at no cost. Because what we're told is, well, if y'all get your way, women will be going into the alleys of our cities and and trying to do abortions on their own. If you really believe that, hear me on this, and then my rant will be over. But if you really believe that that's what's going to happen, we're going to have back alley abortions. If we have bills like the Hyde Amendment and if we defund Planned Parenthood, if you really believe back alley abortions will become the norm, then throw your call sheet away and open your doors to everyone that walks in and provide the service. But see, it's not about barriers. It's about we're making a lot of money off this. And I know that there's some people that are working in those organizations that truly believe they're helping women. I don't deny that. But to argue that we're creating the barrier, at Hope Resource Center, we've gotten rid of all the barriers. We've gotten rid of all the barriers. No cost. No judgment. And so that's what we're about when we're talking about life issues. When we're talking about pro-woman, pro-baby issues. We want to see these moms succeed. We want to see these babies succeed. We want to walk alongside of them and help them with this. And that's why we opened our doors at Hope Resource Center. And we'll talk more when we come back.
You walk on waves, you run with clouds, you paint the sky.
And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Again, thank you for listening. Learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. Right now we have Teresa on the line. You had a question for me.
Yeah, I just wondered if this question had been posed to any of the legislatures. And that's this. If somebody goes out here, willy-willy, blowjob whoever, and pays somebody to kill somebody, that's considered murder, right? And conspiracy, right?
Right.
Okay, so what's the difference in these doctors getting paid to murder these unborn children?
Right, and that's the thing about the abortion question is where do we draw the line? And it's the same argument if someone is driving and they have a car wreck and they say they're drunk driving and they have a car wreck and they hit a woman, a pregnant woman, that they could be charged with two deaths in that scenario. Even though the baby is in the womb, they in many cases around the country they're going to be charged with two deaths, not just one.
And so
that's why intellectual consistency is important. And I appreciate your phone call. Thanks so much. And so as we look at these issues in front of us, these are important questions to ask ourselves and to ask of people that we're having conversations with. Again, it's, you know, the last segment, I might have got a little rant mode for a second, but it's important to have these conversations with people and to hear them out. Let them explain why they believe what they believe. And what you're going to find is ultimately they're always going to end with, well, it's a woman's right to choose whatever she wants to choose. Now, we don't agree with that in any other scenario. But in this case, for whatever reason, we have been sold the bill of goods that it's okay to make that choice for any reason whatsoever. And so... they say safe, legal, and rare. They say rape, incest, life of mom. But if you look at someone that is pro-choice and they look at you and they say, what about rape, incest, life of mom? And then you look at them and say, okay, I'll give you that. Let's pass legislation that would outlaw abortion except in those cases. What do you think they're going to say to you? They're going to say, well, no, a woman should be able to have an abortion for whatever reason. And so they're not going to give in on that. But like I said, if they did, that would be a giant step in the right direction. A giant step. And so as we have these conversations, and as we look at the things that need to be done and regulations and requirements, I just pre-ordered a book, and I'm trying like everything to get the authors on the show so you can hear from them, but the book about the Gosnell story up in Pennsylvania and the atrocious conditions and the terrible conditions that that he had in his clinic. And I use that term loosely because it was a terrible place. And where not just babies were being aborted, but women were dying on the exam tables. Multiple women died. The government didn't step in and do his job and do the proper inspections. And so when they finally go in, they go in to go after Gosnell about prescription drug abuse and that he was giving out drugs that to people that didn't have prescriptions. And when they went in, they found something so much worse. And they found parts of babies inside the refrigerator and the freezer, and they found cat feces everywhere, and they found all of these things. And then they start interviewing the employees and the staff, and they saw real quick this was a torture chamber for women, particularly poor minority women. And the guy that ran the clinic, Gosnell, is an African-American himself. And so there's a book coming out. There's a movie coming out about that. And like I said, I'm trying like my hardest to get the authors on here. But those things are important to know what's going on out there. It is because of that why we need some regulations. It's because of our deep love for our patients at Hope that we sought out accreditation. We paid our own money. We didn't wait for the government to tell us to do that. And we've been operating like this in this setting for 20 years now. And again, go back and when we put it on podcast, go back and listen to the last segment. Because what you're going to hear, and even this week, what you're going to hear is as many pro-lifers are marching, you're going to hear a lot of pro-choicers in the abortion lobby saying all they're seeking to do is put barriers in front of women who need abortions, or barriers in front of women who need health care. Now, when they say that, think about it for a second. And then I want you to remember Hope Resource Center and 2,500 other clinics like us across this country that aren't charging a dime to the patient. So what we have done is we have gotten rid of the barrier. And what the abortion lobby do is they put the barrier in front of the patient by saying you have to pay before you can get served. Or your insurance has to pay before you can get served. Or the state has to pay before you can get served. And so if their goal is to eliminate barriers, then be a real nonprofit and just open your doors to whoever wants to come in and don't charge them anything. But again, that's not their goal. Their goal is to make as much money as possible. And I apologize for all the rants today, but I was in that kind of mood. It was one of those weekends and I needed to get that off my chest before I go to Washington, D.C. So be praying for me. Be praying for our staff this week. We love you and we thank you for listening. Talk to you soon.